This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A happy Labor Day weekend to everybody. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us in about 15 minutes' time, TSN analyst Marty B. Ron is going to join us. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post to talk about NHL expansion. And Kalen Qualley, our good friend, the coordinator of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program, he's going to join us in the second hour as well as that program gets underway on Tuesday. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website that bears our name and has the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleague Richard Pollock on my left, as he was here a second ago and just poked his head back out, so we'll say hello to him when he returns momentarily.
Morning, Drew.
How are you, sir?
Doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing fine and dandy as well. Thank you for asking. Big Labor Day plans? Big weekend plan for you?
Not particularly.
No?
No. That's got our football pool on Monday.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good one.
And that's about it.
Yeah. We're going to be joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, is actually doing his draft as we speak, I believe.
Oh, really? It's an early one.
Yeah.
Like early in the day.
Yeah, early in the morning. Exactly. Right. And so he's going to talk about NHL expansion, and he's got the number 2 overall pick in his fantasy football draft at the same time.
Well, we already had one on Thursday.
Yeah.
And, you went old reliable, like usual.
Well, I mean,
it's a good team.
I don't know that I went really that old reliable. First round I did, I sat there at 7, and Marshawn Lynch was still there at 7. I thought,
Drew pick, Marshawn Lynch.
Well, I've never had him before.
He's your type of player.
Well, again,
it's old reliable.
It is old reliable in that I think I don't love him at 2 this year, but at 7, I think he's, I mean, I don't think that the drop-off is going to be that steep. I don't expect it's going to be a huge year, but at some point in time, there is value in taking a guy that might not be as good as in years past.
I wonder what Ezzy thinks about that.
Well, Ezzy, I'm sure, has been busy prepping for the fantasy football draft on Monday as well. Right, Ez?
Good morning, by the way.
Yeah, good morning.
All I've been doing is preparing for this fantasy draft. Mm-hmm. Sheets, spreadsheets, mock drafts, reading.
Reading is good.
Writing.
Yeah, arithmetic, the three
I'm ready
R's.
To go.
Yeah, you seem
You've sent a couple. Drew's the commissioner, of course, if you didn't mention that earlier.
I didn't.
Sorry, I missed the first 2 minutes of the show.
It's okay.
I had to get a glass of water. Something in my throat here.
Yeah, you got to hydrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
Bit of a late night last night, Drew.
I heard. Nice to see that you guys made it here on time, though. Well, marginally on time, I suppose. Anyways, let's get started by talking about a little bit of hockey, and let's start with Andre Pavlik. Apparently, and I know that Richard's ready to go off on this.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah.
According to his agent, who has no vested interest whatsoever in lying or not completely representing the truth, Andre Pavlik has totally changed his body and is entering the upcoming NHL season in the best shape of his career. How much stock do you put into that?
Well, not much when it's Alan Walsh, and you mentioned the agent. The agent's Alan Walsh. He's certainly not unbiased when it comes to speaking about his players. If you read his Twitter account, which I did for a week and then stopped reading it forever because it was nauseating, all he does is talk about how good his players are, how many points they've put up, and it's all leverage, and he works the public. And so in this situation, he talks about Pavlik. Of course it is. Of course it's his job. I can't stand the way he does it, but he can do what he wants, and these players are paying him that percentage to represent their interests. Pavlik's under contract here, and I think this smacks a little bit of desperation in Walsh's case, because usually when you're pumping a player's tires, it's when he needs to get paid. And in this case, he's already under contract for another 3 years. So this is a situation where he clearly realizes that Pavlik in Winnipeg could be on the outs. So Pavlik has apparently gotten into shape. Now, what does that mean, change his body? What does that mean? It's a very ambiguous term. We have no clue. Nobody's seen him. Has Pavlik come to camp the past few years and the years prior when in Atlanta? Probably carrying some extra weight. Yeah, he has. Have there been really good goalies in the past who have carried extra weight? Yeah, there have. So if he has lost the weight, that's one thing. If he's lost the weight, then the question to me is, does that improve his game? I would say yes, it would improve his game, likely. At least his endurance and ability to play longer and, more back-to-backs if they need that. They probably won't. In further into the season, things like that, and not fade down the stretch. At the same time, and there's no guarantee that's going to happen, and how much of goaltending is mental, and goaltending is so difficult to predict. So, I think it's much ado about nothing right now, but if he comes into camp in shape, at least that shows he's a little bit more dedicated to his craft. I mean, guys like Pavlik, who carries some extra weight, guy like Devin Sediguchi, who we'll speak about later, comes into camp out of shape. That says something about how much you care, usually. And unless you're uber-talented like Drew Doughty, it's very hard to be able to carry a little extra weight around the NHL.
And we know, Drew, that Paul Maurice is going to put more emphasis on training, conditioning specifically, I should say. And Richie mentioned the weight and Andre Pavlik's training and if it makes him a better goalie this year. And really, that's what it boils down to. Because he's training, and I think we could all agree that we believe that he's training. As far as how much weight he's lost, as Richie said, we haven't seen any pictures or we haven't been with Pavlik and his trainer. But the reality of the situation is Pavlik has to have a big year and establish himself. And he has to probably play more games this year, guys. And that's the key. Michael Hutchinson has not been a proven backup in the NHL like Al Montoya has. And ultimately, you know, if he's able to prove himself as the number one goaltender this year, conditioning will have a huge part of it.
Of the three areas, defense, forward, goaltending, mm-hmm. is goaltending the one that leaves you with the most concern with the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, it leaves me with the most concern, but all of them to me are concerning.
Right.
Honestly, they're all concerning. But yeah, it leaves you with the most concern because, you know, he has some potential. He has potential. I said it before. Like, I think he's a bottom of the National Hockey League starting goalie. I said that in that bottom third. But I think he has potential to be better, and I think he would be better likely in a different system with better players around him. But that doesn't mean I think he'd be upper echelon. What he has to do is, see, he has the physical gifts, guys. Like, he's tall, and he can move around pretty well. If you talk to NHL, you know, goalies or people who kind of follow goalies, you know, he's a little bit too much movement. It's a little sloppy. Mm-hmm. But, and he's not like Carey Price. I mean, you watch Carey Price, it's like a clinic on how to play goal, just his mechanics.
Right.
But it doesn't mean he can't, you know, learn those things. But you have to be willing to do that. And again, does the weight help your mechanics? Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's a little more free flowing. Probably you feel like you're not carrying as much. You can feel you can get side to side a little better, but you have to also dedicate yourself to that. And how much better can you get over an off season? I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of questions here.
If your fundamentals are wrong, or if you're out of control,
I don't know enough about it, though, Drew. Like, I just think people that tell me this is that
right.
Exactly.
But
I mean, who knows?
The knock on him is that he's a little bit out of control when he plays goal. And for some goalies, that mm-hmm. works well. I mean, Hasek was never a prototypical goalie. He was Gumby, flipping and flopping, and it worked for him. But for the most part, there's a reason why they're called fundamentals in that, you know, usually you need to have the following, you know, you need to be solid in those attributes to be successful. There are obviously outliers to that rule, but it doesn't seem like right now that Andre Pavlik, A, has the fundamentals down pat, or B, is good enough to be an outlier to the rule.
And I think he's been fading as opposed to the opposite, which is a problem, right? He's moving his way. You know, there's a lot of people who tell you, like, he's a backup at most. And so he's obviously got to prove himself. And if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you have holes in your top four in defense and you have holes in your top nine and forward and you have depth issues at forward and just, I think, you don't have top echelon talent for the most part, those are a bunch of holes that if you have goaltending that doesn't do it or cover up some of those problems, then you're really going to be in trouble. You know? And at some point, it's, you know, is the goaltending is... We know even on other poor teams that, you know, goaltending, you have an idea of how to judge it. But I think that most of the people who comment on the goaltending and how bad he is don't really know why he's bad. You know what I mean? Like, you could say he's not very good,
right,
and they need to replace him. That's fine. You can say you're entitled to your opinion. But I'd like to know why you think that. And I think goalies are so hard to analyze that if you ask that person, they probably wouldn't have the answer for you.
They would just look at the numbers and say he's
right.
bottom of the league. He's
That's
not
right.
good
he's
enough.
Not good enough. There we
Whereas
go. Okay.
they can't pinpoint the
well. Yeah,
the actual
I mean,
problem.
So does his being in shape? Sure, it helps. It helps to prepare, but it's certainly no guarantee, because there are players who aren't in shape who are just very good and are very talented. There are players who are in great shape who aren't talented. So I don't know. And has he ever been in good shape to be able to compare it to that? I don't think so either. Remember Chris Mason, as he questioned, you know, not a direct call, but kind of questioned his conditioning the first year in Atlanta when he was playing there. Like that he wasn't being able to kind of sustain his play over the course of the season because he wasn't in great shape. You know, old habits die hard.
And a lot of that is probably a function of youth, I would say, in that you don't, you know, when you're young enough and you've got to the big show, not the morning show, but the NHL in this instance, you know, you can say that, well, I don't need to be in better shape. Look how far I've gone so far.
Well, you're right, because, you know, you play in the queue and then you win the Calder Cup and you come up and you have a pretty stellar start for a young goalie. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
But it's been a few years now.
That's my point. It's been a few years. You're no longer able to get away with that because your reputation and your performance has been sullied, you know, by yourself.
He could take better care of himself off the ice.
And if he now realizes that, because, you know, you would hope that with, you know, as he gets a little bit older, he gets a little bit more mature and he understands what it takes to be the best professional possible.
Or Alan Walsh says to him, hey, you keep playing like this, you can kiss 3.6 goodbye.
Sure. Whatever it actually is, yeah, whatever the answer actually is in that instance. It's not a bad thing.
I think it's more than, sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's more the money than the other, because what's taken you so long?
Well, you didn't have
suddenly
to.
Turn it on. You're like, boom, it's on. And I'm going to start. Like, you're in the National Hockey League. Don't you want to win every year?
Well, you didn't have to get into good shape before because they already paid you. I mean, I see what you're saying.
But he's still paid right now. I guess he's. I mean, I think he's seeing another his lack of other contract. I think he's seeing losing the job. That's what I think. I think Hutchinson scares him. Mason didn't scare him. Montoya didn't scare him. They were older goalies. Everybody knew they could not handle more than a 25 game slate. Everybody knew that. They're not good enough. They've had their chance. Montoya and Mason had their chance over the years. Hutchinson hasn't really had his chance yet, which means there's the ability, well, the unknown. And the unknown in this case is that he could be good and he could lose his job to him.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have a choice. He had to be in very good shape. That's why that should come as no surprise when Alan Walsh is tweeting out that Andre Pavlik is in good shape, the best shape of his career. You would hope that every Jets player is training, because training camp's only 3 weeks away, pardon me. But the reality is, guys, he, as we've said earlier in the segment, he has a lot to prove this year. Third year of the contract. As Richie mentioned, Michael Hutchinson has the ability right now, really, if Pavlik isn't playing well early in the season, to steal the job. I mean, it's not guaranteed anymore for Pavlik. And he has to steal some games for this team this year.
The one issue you'd have is, and this is a concern, because, I mean, Hutchinson showed very well in the AHL and showed well in his very limited, meaningless games in the National Hockey League. But let's be real here. If Hutchinson is that young guy who still needs a lot of time, then the Jets are not well equipped to deal with the possibility of him struggling again.
Sure.
And maybe they're not pushing him enough, too. It's a thing.
Well, if he comes up and he's not ready for this level, we don't
know. Which is fine, yeah, which could be happen, and that's completely understandable.
Sure. I mean, he's played 3 games in the NHL, whatever the actual number is, 3, 4, whatever it was at the end of last year. And like you said, meaningless time.
Meaningless time, yeah.
Yeah. So, and he got a ton of experience in the AHL playoffs, and he did fantastic for the Ice Caps.
But you don't know if that carries over or not.
Sure.
And if you're the Jets and you're a Jet fan, you hope that it does. But if it doesn't, and it's not pushing, and you're not pushing Pavlik, then, I mean, maybe he gets more comfortable. Maybe that's not much of a threat. You didn't bring in Craig Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't bring in a Robin Leonard, and we'll talk about that, those two guys later. But it's that idea. When you don't bring in those two types of players, you're not going to push them too much.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us to continue the talk about goaltending. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Coming up momentarily, Marty Biron, TSN, RDS, MSG analyst, is going to join us here on the show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com, the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Marty Biron coming up in a couple of seconds. I think Timmy's working on getting him on the line.
You know, another thing quickly before we get to Marty is you hear a lot of talk now about, you know, I'm in the best shape of my career, or I'm going to have a, you know, it's going to be a great year, and this is my goal. Everybody wants to score 30 and get 75 points. Not everybody does.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, you know, just saying you're in the...
There's a lot of talk right now, and you see it in football starting on the next, you know, on Thursday coming up here, and basketball is kind of gearing up with the World Championships there, or the World Cup, whatever they call it now, and hockey. They're all kind of gearing up at the same time, and you hear a lot of talk, and most of it doesn't come to fruition.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from RDS, MSG, and TSN hockey analyst Marty Biron. Marty, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay.
That's good. Marty, last segment we were talking about Andrei Pavlik. As news came out earlier this week, his agent tweeted that he's in the best shape of his career, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, for a goaltender, I mean, you obviously played the position for so many years, you would know better than anybody. For a goaltender, you know, how important is conditioning on a, you know, game in, game out, year by year basis?
Well, it's really important, but it's only I say 1/3 of the. Of the equation. When I was with the Rangers, our goalie coach over there, Ben Waller, always used, you know, three different things that make up the whole goaltending aspect. You know, physically, how you are, your conditioning, your strength, your lower body strength, your core strength, be able to go through practices and games and all of that. So physical was one. Technical is another one, to make sure that technically you're at the top of your game to be able to be a number one or be the best goalie in the league, and mentally is the third one. So, you know, the summertime is about trying to make gains on the conditioning and the strength thing, but that's only 1/3 of what you have to do as a goalie. So if you come into camp and mentally you're not in the right spot, or technically, you're behind where you need to be, because those are things you need to work on as much as getting in the gym. These are not things that you see somebody just going to gym from 10 to 12 and making the gains, because working on your mental aspect of the game or the technical aspect of the game is very much different than that. But so it's only 1/3 of it. So, yeah, it's a good start, but there's a lot of other factor that come in to playing the position.
Marty, you know, in your experience, what's the hardest one of those three to, you know, become the best at?
Oh, it changes all the time. There, you know, I always thought I was a really strong mental goaltender, and I hated to work out. But then, if you get tired mentally, you get fatigued, and if you get mentally fatigued, technically, you're not where you need to be, and you start cheating on the ice, or you start not doing the work you need to do. So I wouldn't say there's one that's better than another or more difficult. They're all difficult. It depends on the individual, and you got to know them really well to be able to see where they need more attention to details, where they need somebody to help them walk that path to success. That's why goalie coaches are so important with teams right now, because you got one coach dealing with two goalies, and they get to be with them every day. They get to know their physical state, where they are condition-wise, if they're working technically on the ice, and where they are mentally. So that's really the person that should know where and how to push the goalies and in what department to push them.
Marty, back to Andrei Pavlik for a second. I guess this is a two-part question. Do you believe Andrei Pavlik is a number one goaltender in the NHL that can play 60-plus games? And I guess what are the strengths, and maybe more importantly, what are the weaknesses that he has to work on to, if the answer to your question is that he isn't a number one goaltender, what does he have to work on in your mind?
Well, I believe that just with pure skills to play the position, to make saves, the athletic abilities that I've seen from Pavel, like, he's got the makeup of a number one goaltender. He's proved that he can play solid for many times. He He proved that he can steal games, and he's done that in the past. Now he's not been able to do it consistently. He's also not being put in a position, you know, being moved around from an organization in Atlanta that moved to Winnipeg that kind of rebuild again. So it's been hard. A lot of the successful goalies are put in a position to succeed as well. Some of them make it regardless of the position that they're in, but mentally it's got to be tough for him to see that he's as good as some other goalies but hasn't had the rewards at the end of it. So right now I'm worried about where he's at, if he wants to be in Winnipeg, if he wants to continue fighting to try to get the Jets where they need to be, you know, in the playoff picture and moving forward. That's a very tough position to be, especially when you've been struggling for a little bit. When I was with Buffalo, I wanted to get the Sabres in the playoffs so bad after Hasek left and before Miller came in. But there comes a point where, you know, we went through bankruptcy. We went through a different owner. I didn't know where things were going. It just weighs down on you, and you almost start thinking, well, maybe if I was somewhere else, it'd be better. So that's what concerns me a little bit. I don't know him personally. I've not talked to him, but as an outsider and somebody that's played the position, that could be a concern.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is TSN MSG and RDS analyst Marty Biron.
You know, Marty, we're in Winnipeg, so we have that perspective. We see it every day. But what's the perception of the team and the players in the National Hockey League from people outside the city of Winnipeg in terms of this team not only coming into this year, but just the desirability of playing here?
Well, I think it's a struggle, Winnipeg. And I mean, I live in Buffalo, so I know what you're talking about, because mm-hmm. a lot of people say the same thing about Buffalo, is that you're not going to be the top destination for free agents. People are not going to think, well, I'm going to Winnipeg or I'm going to Buffalo as being a place where they really want to make it work. Past failure or lack of success is going to be also something that as a player you're going to look for. You're going to want to go to a team that's going to get to the playoffs, that's going to get to win a Stanley Cup, and it's difficult. But you're seeing the smaller market teams, I don't want to say the less desirable destination, come more of a dominant player in the free agent market or in the trades. And we saw that this year with Buffalo getting Georges from mm-hmm. Montreal, Gionta and free agent. It's becoming more of a destination for players to come to, because they're seeing the fans, they're seeing the community, they're seeing players that are coming here and that are loving it, doing it. I think it's the same thing with Winnipeg. I was there this year with the Rangers, and I talked to a lot of players, and they loved it being in Winnipeg. And that little bit now is starting to spread around. So it's not like it was 10 years ago when players wanted to go to the sunny destination, or they wanted to go to New York or Philadelphia and Chicago and all these places. It's becoming more and more where players talk about their experiences with a city, with an organization, and Winnipeg, only have been there a few short years, is starting slowly but surely to get a little bit more attention, and hopefully they can keep going, because you can try to build a team just from the draft and from developing your own players, but you also need an addition here and there in free agency, and you need to be able to land some big names too.
Marty Biron's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty, going back to the goaltending situation, here in Winnipeg, the backup is likely to be Michael Hutchinson, a guy who's played 3 games in the NHL in his career so far. He had a tremendous last season in the AHL with St. John's, taking them all the way to the Calder Cup final. How difficult is it for a young goaltender to make that leap from a very good AHL goaltender to being an NHL backup or potentially an NHL starter?
Well, I think what makes there's two types of goalies that really make the best backup goaltenders. One are the veterans that are later in their career, that have really a lot of experience. They can play every 10 days and still play well because they're They can handle it, the pressure of it. They can mentally prepare for it. And then there's the young guys that are really hungry to play, that will practice hard every day, that are just coming off strong seasons in the American League, and that are going to be just excited to be thrown a bone once in a while. If you're in the middle, if you're been in the league 6-7 years, and you know you're hoping to be a number one, but your place as a backup, and that could be problematic. You know, you're still going to do your job, but I don't think that's the best backup situation you can. So having this young kid coming in after a strong AHL year, you know, really hungry to be the backup, hungry to get a game here and there, maybe not expecting to get more than 15, 20 games, that's really important. And if there is ever a breakdown with Pavlik, an injury or something like that, then he's been a number one guy. He's played a lot of games just, you know, just last year, so he'd be ready to step in and just, you know, like riding a bike. You play every game, and you're trying to get the as much success as you can. So I think that that could be very good for everybody. It could push Pavlik a little bit, you know, further down the road as to, okay, well, I got a young guy here, and he's had success. I got to step it up and be the guy everybody wants me to be. But it also gives you a really good second option when you have to.
Marty, we talked, you know, right before you hopped on about, you know, you're going to hear a lot of stuff over the next month, even month and a half before the actual NHL season starts. This guy's expecting to have a big year. This guy's expecting to have a big year. A lot of people come in, and there is a lot of talk. Does that talk come into the dressing room as well in terms of expectations? And if it does, you know, guys say, you know, setting lofty totals for themselves, how seriously do the other players take those expectations and some of that talk?
No, I think everybody that really, I think everybody that's playing in the NHL or professional hockey, when a season starts, they're always thinking they're going to be better than the year before. Now, if you've had a great year the year before, you're feeling confident, you're saying, I'm going to be even better this year because I know I can do it. If you've had a tough year, you worked hard all summer, you're coming into camp, I'm going to have a better year because now I'm ready for it. There's not one player that doesn't think that they're going to, you know, go the other direction, that they're going to pack it in. And if if there's a player that thinks that way, they shouldn't be playing the game, because that's really not what it's what it's all about. It's about trying to be better than you were the year before and push the ceiling up a little bit to try to contribute to your team. So the expectations, everybody's talking, and you know, you open the newspaper, you listen to radio. There is expectation. It doesn't really come into the locker room all that much because everybody knows what their own expectations are, and that's really what players focus on. I mean, you can open the hockey news and read where they're going to predict your point total mm-hmm. for next year, but nobody comes into the locker room and says, hey, you're going to get 79 points this year. It says in the hockey news. No, that's not how the locker room works. They just think, well, you know what, I had 62 points last year. I want to set myself a goal and go to 70, and that's what it is. It's not so much what other people put in the print or on the air that comes into the player's mind.
One last question, Marty. You know, this day and age, with social media and the availability of so much information, do the players sometimes like have too much access to that and read too much about themselves and allow themselves possibly to get too down on themselves, or conversely, maybe too arrogant?
Oh, that will depend on each individual player. I've seen a lot of players that get so fired up when somebody would criticize them. Some other players really play better when they see a writer giving them a compliment or saying they're playing well and saying they should be an all-star when they haven't been. And it depends on the player. I think everybody has got to police themselves in the right way. Take in what they can and throw into the trash what they don't want to see. And if they're at that level right now playing in the NHL, that's because they've been able to do that for many years, from the time they were Pee-wee and Bantam and going through juniors in the American League and whatnot. Everybody's got their own recipe for success. I always like to read good things about myself because it gave me a little bit of edge. It gave me a little confidence. And if somebody wrote something bad, I just dismissed it. I try to stay consistent. I just dismissed it and then went on with my business. So everybody's got their own different ways But there is a lot of access out there, like you said, with social media. Mm-hmm. But again, with Twitter, you can scroll really quickly through all of it and just not pay attention to any of it, or just take it all in. It's really is different for everybody out there.
Marty Biron is an analyst with TSN, RDS, and the MSG Network. Marty, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Much appreciated.
No problem. You guys enjoyed the last few days of summer before hockey starts again.
You too, Marty. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Marty Biron, always brings the goods in an interview. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, he's really always really good. I love how, you know, he's very honest.
Yeah, very candid, very honest, very nice guy. I mean, responded in 2 seconds when we requested him
great.
To come on.
Great guy.
So, yeah, terrific guy. Gentlemen, I want to bring you back to March 10th of this past year.
The fact of the matter is we have no expansion process that we're going through. It's not something that we envision happening anytime soon, if at all. I know there's a lot of speculation, and yes, there's a lot of interest. We're listening to the expressions of interest. We haven't decided what, if anything, to do with them.
So from not expanding to potentially four
teams. Well, your
teams,
definition of soon and Gary Bettman's definition of soon may be very different.
Of course. I mean, I think we all knew back on March 10th when Gary Bettman was speaking in Boca Raton, Florida. I believe that was either the general manager's meetings or the owner's meetings. I'm not 100% sure which. Nobody really, you know, he was sort of being, nobody really believed him wholeheartedly right. that they weren't looking to expand.
Yeah, and I've been critical of Gary Bettman, but you would be foolish if you don't listen. Right. To anything.
Yeah, somebody comes to your table and presents you with a business plan, you should right. at least right. hear them out. So the news broke earlier this week. I mean, it was Howard Bloom and Tony Gallagher, both of whom said that it's going to be four teams, potentially, that are going to join an expanded NHL. The NHL, as they would, you know, poo-pooed that idea, saying, you know, we're not on the verge of anything. It's all, you know, nothing new to report on the subject. It's mm-hmm. all speculation, you know, sort of the lie that you have to tell at that point in time
right.
by the NHL's perspective. What do you think it's going to be?
I don't think it's going to be four expansion teams. I think that report is incorrect. I think it'll be two expansion teams and two teams move, which is, you know, Dan Patrick was reporting 2 days ago that it's Carolina moving to Vegas. That yeah. was what that was one of the reports. I personally and Phoenix Coyotes, I believe their kicker for moving is $50 million of losses over the first 5 years. I believe that's the loss threshold.
Well, you mentioned Dan Patrick. Here's Dan Patrick talking about NHL relocation.
Or is it going to be a relocation? Two teams to consider here for relocation in Las Vegas, 2016, the Coyotes. If they lose, and I think it's $25 million, I think there's a certain amount of money. If they lose that again, the NHL can come in and relocate them. So if the Phoenix Coyotes continue to lose money, the NHL can step in and say, we're going to relocate you. The other team to keep an eye on is, remember the Hartford Whalers owner, Peter Karmanos? And I guess he's asking an exorbitant price for his team. That's also a possibility, from what I'm told, that they could relocate as well.
A couple of things there. I mean, remember that Dan Patrick's career started in Bristol, Connecticut with ESPN. That's right around, well, Hartford Whalers didn't leave till the mid-90s. So
no,
he may very well, and Karmanos was the owner of the Whalers then.
Yes.
So he may very well have had some connections or developed connections in that respect.
The Hartford Whalers were the home team of ESPN of Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, they're the closest professional team to Bristol,
right.
Connecticut.
No, and Dan Patrick obviously is very connected, so that's interesting. I think the threshold is $50 million, Drew, and just to technically talk about what Patrick said, the NHL wouldn't move the Coyotes at that time. The new ownership has the right to move.
That's right. It's in their clause.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you hear things through the grapevine a bit, like, you know, you want to make $50 million of losses. There's ways to do it.
Yeah. You can make, I don't That's think right. that they're going to lose $50 million. Like, the net worth of the
or
ownership group is going to go down,
yeah.
you know, by that much. But there are certainly ways to shuffle money around, and on paper, you know, make it seem like you've lost what you need to move a franchise.
So I think it would be hilarious, and it's not going to happen. NHL is going to expand to more teams than NFL. I know, obviously, there's Canadian aspect of it, and you can have six, seven, eight, nine teams in Canada. That being said, okay, I think what we're looking at is we're looking at Vegas getting a team, Seattle getting a team, Quebec getting a team, and Toronto getting a team. Those are the four teams. So then the next point is what the NHL actually wants here is balance, right? They want 16 teams in each conference, okay? So the West is 14 right now. Mm-hmm. So if you move a team to Vegas, there's your 15. Move a team to Seattle, that's your 16. You might very well, you know, that's the thing. If you move Carolina over to Vegas, right, you can conceivably have 15 and 15 there.
Right.
And then you drop a team in Seattle, and then who's moving, you know, and then are you moving another team to Seattle? Like, I just think, honestly, at the end of the day, Drew, it's going to be where the most money is. Meaning, you know, if they can get expansion from, of those four cities, whatever two will pay the most will be expansion, and the other two will be moves.
Sure.
And they'll arbitrarily set the value, too, somewhat. Remember, that's what happened with the Jets. There was a fee. I mean, the Jets weren't worth. I mean, the Thrashers weren't worth what the $150 that they were paid for them, or $130, whatever it was. They were worth, I think it was $70, I believe, and then they pumped up the $50 million.
The $50 or $60 million, whatever it was, had to go to the other owners to sort of approve of the move. It was just it's a buyout, you know, to let me do this.
Right. I mean, the truth of the matter is, as soon as it was moved here, that was recouped.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not like, you know, exactly. It's not a long-term.
Value-wise.
That's right. I mean, the Atlanta, you're right. Nobody would have paid $130 million for the Atlanta Thrashers to stay in Atlanta or anything along those lines. It was just the nature of the way the situation was working out and for the ownership to look that way. You know, okay, so we're in agreement, though. You know, so how is this going to play out? You know, how do you foresee this working out over the next... What's your time frame? Do you think this is a five-year thing? Do you think this is a 10-year thing?
Well, everybody keeps saying it's going to happen by 2017. Now, I think...
No, there's no arena in Seattle. Yet.
Right, but we're getting close here, and we had a reporter from Seattle on 2 weeks ago, I think it was now, two or 3 weeks ago, kind of talking about that process, and obviously the NBA and those are connected. Quebec City's kind of getting the go-ahead. You know, you'll hear people say that if Toronto had that second arena ready, the team, you know, would just be on its way to walking right in there. And then you have Vegas. So, I mean, I think 4 years, 3 to 4 years, is a reasonable time frame, and I think people are, you know... The Carolina Hurricanes can move to Vegas tomorrow and play out of, you know, the Thomas and Mack Center, right?
Well, or they're building a brand new arena.
That's right. They're building it, but are they, you know, say they move next year. I don't know the timeline for the arena. The whole Vegas thing is an interesting one. I want to get onto that for a second.
Sure.
Because, you know, obviously the gambling aspect is going to be tricky. You know, it's interesting, this whole Pete Rose 25-year anniversary of, you know, gambling and baseball and the Hall of Fame and all that. Hockey hasn't had a huge... I know there was that issue with Rick Tocchet, but I think that was another sport. So hockey hasn't had an issue with gambling. And I know because now you can gamble online and it's readily available that it's maybe... That's mitigated a bit. I'm not so sure, though, that it's going to have to be very... It's going to be very tricky for hockey to balance the gambling aspect. The other aspect is the partying and... the exposure, but really, most likely, negative exposure that will come from having a team there and the parting of... I actually think the bigger concern, Drew, I think the bigger concern would be on visiting players than on the home team.
Well, I have two clips on that front. Here's Alan Snell. He was on TSN 1050. He's with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Mm-hmm. Here's his comments about the Las Vegas arena situation.
Well, what's interesting is that MGM, AEG are pretty confident that they could run the arena without NBA or NHL. In fact, their business model is built on not having a professional team in the building. In fact, you know, it's interesting. I covered the groundbreaking of this building on May 1st, and I specifically asked Jim Murin, who is the CEO of MGM Resorts, you know, the very question and the very issue of, about the prospect of bringing in NBA, NHL into the building. And he said a really interesting response, and that was, he said, a pro team doesn't necessarily help my bottom line at MGM, because what happens when you get an NHL team or an NBA team, they want a healthy bite of all the revenue streams in the building. They want, you know, they want a big share of the suite sales. They want naming rights. They want concessions. They want parking. And it doesn't necessarily make the building owner a lot of money. They already have 150 different events lined up outside of 40 home dates for NHL or NBA.
That's an interesting clip, Drew. I'm also interested in seeing who in Vegas wants to go to hockey games.
Well, that's the question. People that live there, I don't think want to. And I think people that are vacationing there, you know.
Like, are you going to Vegas? I mean, maybe you go to a game, but and it's just an odd, if you've been to Vegas, it's an odd place to say, hey, let's go watch a hockey game.
Yeah, I can understand, you know, it's like last year we saw those Jets fans that went down to Phoenix for that
it's
game.
Different.
It's one game.
You're not in Vegas. It's different. Are they going to have windows on the arena?
I mean, the whole thing is bizarre.
Smoke-free, or is it going to be drinking of a problem, you know?
There's sort of, I mean, it seems like there's a reason why there hasn't been a professional sports team in Vegas.
Hold on, yet. I'm going to go from the strip where I can drink and walk anywhere for drink for $2 to the arena where I can sit in a cold arena, mm-hmm. to bring a coat that I have to carry around, and I have to pay $10 a beer,
yeah.
where it doesn't cost me $10 to drink all night on the strip where I'm playing cards and doing everything else. It's not going to be that appealing.
I don't disagree whatsoever.
And the corporate, there's a lot of money in Vegas. But I
was discussing this with people.
Nobody goes in Carolina, granted. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well, you know, they build theaters in Vegas for performers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Britney Spears, Celine Dion, Madonna, I think, has a theater, whatever it is. And they pay those performers, I don't know, let's say it's $20 million a year.
Sure.
And they get 150 nights out of that performer at that theater. Right. I mean, is it worth any casino or ownership group to pay $70 million for 41 nights a year of entertainment?
You know, it's all about the bottom line, right?
Yeah, and I don't see it working financially there when that same money can be spent on something completely different that probably gets you a better return on your investment.
It's just an odd place, if you've been to Las Vegas, an odd place to say, hey, let's go to a game.
Here's Jamie McLennan. You mentioned talking about temptation and, you know, visiting teams, you know, heading to Vegas.
Well, I mean, wait one second. But okay. Also this aspect, just like the fan involvement, like how much, this gets back to the gambling thing, I guess, but you're going to go to the strip, you're going to put $100 down on the game, and then you're going to go to the game to watch it. And I mean, it's just, like, I know that could happen here anyways online or anything else, but it just seems like some guys with a lot of money, he's going to put a lot of money down on the game he's going to see, and there's going to be relationships developed, and it's a slippery slope. It is a slippery slope. This could work out well, but this could be and I think it's going to happen, Drew, then this could be a complete disaster.
Here's Jamie McLennan on Las Vegas.
The temptations are going to be there. One of my friends played for the Las Vegas Thunder. He wasn't making a lot of money, and he was into them for his full salary by December. So if he made 50 grand, he had spent 50 grand, and he was borrowing off his next year's salary from the team. You're always going to hear stories of that. And it doesn't matter. There are guys, I played with a guy in New York who was like that.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
Manhattan's got a lot to offer.
LA,
too.
Chicago,
right. Montreal, Toronto.
Like Montreal and Toronto, don't think that they don't fly, you know, that they're just innocent cities.
Yeah.
I mean, talk to any NBA player. They go up to Toronto like it's game on.
It's
for
go
them.
Time, man. Yeah. It's Vegas in
and
many ways.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not so worried about that. I agree. And the only thing that I can think of from a league standpoint is they almost know what they have in their back pocket. The Toronto market, they know. Like, that's an out-of-the-park home run.
Toronto, Montreal are not Vegas.
No.
Okay, let's not get crazy there.
Yeah, I mean,
You're not going to have, you know, pool parties with
supermodel.
Yeah, in Toronto. Well, in November.
You don't hear of any NHL players leaving their hometowns in the offseason to go to Toronto or Montreal.
Yeah, I mean, they go
to Vegas.
I enjoy both cities.
Yeah.
Very nice. It's not Vegas.
No, every NHL player goes to Vegas in the offseason for a reason.
And the gambling aspect, that is a touchy situation. What about former players going? What about look how the NHL reacted to the Talk It thing.
Sure.
Betting on NFL.
And yeah, they overreacted, but you're right. The perception that they're so scared of, and so I don't see how that perception gets any better with a team being in Las Vegas.
It's all about money, expansion, sure. Money. But if they go to any more than 32 teams, God help us all,
because we have to watch a lot of bad.
Because
hockey.
I can hardly watch some of the stuff right now, and I'll watch anything. You know, I watch Columbus and Nashville. I enjoy basically any game, But there are some nights where, okay, I mean, because you have to understand now, this is a tough game. This is a big man's game. You need to roll four lines. You need to, because you get worn down. Look at the Kings.
Yeah.
Okay, look at the Kings. You need to have depth. So you're going to bring in two more teams.
Yeah.
That's going to be kind of ugly. You bring in four more teams.
Well, tell me which 50 or 100 players aren't currently in the NHL that you are
see. That's exactly right.
And there aren't any.
Exactly,
Paul Bissonnette, I'm not too upset if I don't get to see Paul Bissonnette play hockey on a night-in-night-out basis.
That's a good point.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before 10 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock here at TSN 1290 Studios. You going to watch the Labor Day Classic tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to watch the Labor Day Classic. I don't think they have a chance, though.
You don't think they have a chance?
No, I think they're going to get killed tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even, I mean, the whole, a whole new team, whole new organization. You don't even think they're going to keep it reasonably
close?
No, I think
they'll give it an effort, but that's not a good situation. It's going in tough environment. Dressler's back. It's trouble. What, you don't agree?
I think that they pull out the victory.
Wow.
It's a bold prediction. Considering
speaking of Vegas, I wouldn't go with that. I wouldn't go to Vegas
exactly.
with you.
You wouldn't go to Vegas with me on that one. But for whatever reason, I think that I certainly don't think they get blown out. I think that the coaching staff is
too good.
Their
defense is pretty good. I don't think they got blown out either, Drew, but they got to score points.
Yeah, I know. Look, they should have beat Saskatchewan here two weeks ago. You were at that game, or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was.
That was a bad throw.
Yeah, it was a bad throw at a bad time. I think he's learned from it, and I think
couldn't stop the run either in that game, though.
I know, but they were still in the position to win.
They were at home.
I know. I get it. I get all the reasons for why they shouldn't. Something tells me, for whatever reason, and my premonitions usually are terribly wrong, so don't take this to the bank. Mm-hmm. Something tells me that for some reason I think they pull it off tomorrow. Game day coverage here on TSN 1290 will begin at 1 p.m. Join Darren Baum and Chris Walby and Troy Westwood for Blue Bomber game day here on the station. Coming up in the second hour of the show, Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post and Kalen Qualley talking about the Pass It Forward hockey equipment program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, for nearly 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. They're drying out right now from a little bit of rain that they received. They'll be closed until the 7th or so of September. Tickets still available, though, for all the upcoming comedians. Check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. And their 30th anniversary weekend, November 14th and 15th. Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, Dave Hempstead, plus some other guests will be popping in. Be sure to get tickets for that. 30 years for Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Which is great, and I've heard a lot of talk about that on the streets.
About the 30th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Lots.
That's good. Yeah. Well, November 14th, 15th, get your tickets quickly, because they are going fast. RumorsComedyClub.com. Gentlemen, there have been some signings in the NHL this week, which is quite fortuitous for us, because it gives us some content. The first is Craig Anderson re-signs in Ottawa for a 3-year deal, $12.6 million. It's an average annual value of $4.2 million. The reason this one is so peculiar is that they had just signed Robin Lehner to a 3-year contract, I believe. Might have been even 4 years.
No, it's 3 years, $2.25 a year.
So they've now signed both Robin Lehner and Craig Anderson as their goaltending duo. Is there too much money locked up in goaltenders in Ottawa right now?
I don't think so. I think this actually makes a lot of sense.
Really?
I do. And I know some people have been ripping this decision by the Senators. And think about it this way, Drew. I mean, this kind of goes back to what we spoke about in segment number one, about Pavlik and Hutchinson. Robin Lehner is a very talented netminder. He has the potential to be a very good number one netminder in the National Hockey League. But he's not yet there. And one of the biggest aspects, and Marty Biron broke it down to physical, you know, mental, and technical. The biggest aspect of the biggest area that needs work for Robin Leonard is the emotional aspect of it. He loses control sometimes. He's young. His emotions get the best of him. And with time, I think that he'll become a very good netminder. But you don't know if he will be yet. And I look at it this way. What are you going to be paying your two goalies over the next couple of years? $6.4 million total? Hey, that buys you a pretty good number one. And those guys combined, and I think in this day and age with the travel, I know they travel first class and all that stuff, but the idea that they're back-to-backs, to be able to play one goalie 50 games, one goalie 30 games, and to be able to have 80 games of really solid NHL netminding for $6.4 million, I have no issue with that at all. I'm very on board with it.
Yeah, and Drew, I have to admit that I was definitely drinking the Robin Leonard Kool-Aid last year, but he struggled. And he went through a long mm-hmm. stretch there. He won his last four games of the season. But, you know, Richie, back to what you were saying about Craig Anderson. Craig Anderson, a couple of years back, had goals against below two, mm-hmm. and he's still the number one goalie there. Robin Leonard, you got to remember, at 23 years old, they're still bringing him along slowly. So I know everyone's expecting Robin Leonard to be the number one guy, but for the time being,
right,
he will probably be, as you say, 1B.
But don't
and as we've seen, 1A, 1B, that system quite often works.
And what were, you know, I thought you were trying to create competition, healthy competition. Are we just going to give Robin Leonard the job? If you're Ottawa, hey, take the job. Take our whole team. We need big-time goaltending. We're going to put all in the hands of a young goaltender who hasn't proven himself yet. And then a whole season. Or are we going to sign a guy for 3 years who we know can do it, has done it before, is a veteran guy? You know, that's what's going to happen. I veteran guy for 3 years. And then you got the young guy who's, by the way, Leonard, this is a big distinction. And Leonard is an RFA at the end of that contract. So if he plays great and takes that number one job, they retain his rights. He'll go to arbitration, but they can pay him. And at that point, he might be the 65-game starter, you know, 65-game-per-year starter with a 915, 920 save percentage and the guy. He might be that guy. But you don't know that yet. And it didn't cost you too much to secure your goaltending for the next few years. I like the move.
Here's Craig Anderson talking about what he hopes to be a bounce-back season now.
You know, obviously we're all human and we all have lives. And taking that part of the contract part of the life out of the equation, you know, it allows me to focus completely 100% on my job of stopping the puck. And there's no distractions whatsoever. From that part of the game, so that's really exciting for me, and that's a good feeling knowing that I'm going to be part of the Sens organization for the next few years.
Kids in the background, yeah. Notwithstanding, yeah. But that's okay. I mean, you know, I'll be honest. When I came into the studio this morning, I haven't really thought about it in the way that you've articulated, and it does make some sense. The concern that I have is that Craig Anderson's not young.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a 3-year deal, mm-hmm. but he still has 1 year left on his current contract.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really a 4-year deal for him. So I'm just not sure that he'll be able to handle it for the next 4 years. And granted, the money does diminish each year. It's 4.75 next year, and it mm-hmm. goes down to 3.1 million in 2017-18. So, I mean, the actual payout is less mm-hmm. on a per-year basis. That's my only concern is Craig Anderson's age. But, you know, with the salary cap going up, you know, you're tying 10% really, a little less than 10%
much, yeah.
in your goaltenders. It's not that much, and I really hadn't thought about it in the way you've articulated.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, from the Jets, if they're paying, you know, Hutchinson's obviously on a minimum deal, but if they were paying a backup $1 million and paying Pavlik 3.6, right?
Yeah.
So 4.6 and 6.4, I mean, that's a big difference in quality of netminder and the value that you're getting for those netminders. I have no issue with the way they're doing this. I think it's actually pretty creative. 3.9 on Pavlik, excuse me. So, hey, I mean, you're talking about $1 million and a little bit of difference.
Moving to Edmonton, they re-signed RFA defenseman Justin Schultz to a 1-year, $3.675 million contract. They talked a lot about having to prove himself still. This is a guy who came in with a lot of hype. And a lot of...
He tore up the AHL, too, after he signed as a free agent out of college.
Yeah.
He tore up the AHL a half year. He was like the MVP of the league, basically. And game to Edmonton certainly has flourished offensively at times. I think there's it's the defensive game that I've always been concerned about, and he needs to grow. And I'm interested to see if he does that, and I think they're kind of interested to see as well, which is why this deal's 1 year.
Well, here's Craig McTavish on the untapped potential of Justin Schultz. Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing through the course of the negotiation that we all agreed on was the untapped potential and the incredible potential of this player. I go back to when we first signed him during the lockout, when he went to the American Hockey League and led the American Hockey League in scoring as a defenseman in his first year. Things that just don't happen to average or good players. Those things only happen to great players, and I feel like Justin is going to be a great player and certainly a great Oiler, and I think time will bear that.
Do you still have that, those high hopes for him?
Well, I think, yeah, he has it in him to be a very good defenseman. The question is, can he defend?
Well, let me ask you this. Let me play clip number 14 here, Timmy. Let me play this one for you, and then you can answer this question.
I think that Justin has Norris Trophy potential, and I don't think there are too many people that would disagree with me in that regard.
And I read that quote, and I thought about it quite a bit, actually. I mean, to be in the Norris conversation, you have to be an offensive defenseman. You have to, because you need to put up the points to get that consideration. Okay? So, because of that possibility, I think, sure, he's going to be in at least a Norris conversation or two. But if he doesn't learn, he's still young, but if he doesn't learn how to defend, especially along the boards, and, you know, sometimes loses, you know, where he's at in his own zone and you know, not the biggest guy. If he doesn't learn how to position himself a little better and bulk up a bit, I don't see him ever winning in Norris because he just can't defend well enough. And, you know, he's not Erik Karlsson.
Sure.
But, you know, he's that similar kind of small right-handed shot, offensive defenseman. Karlsson, you know, I think with Schultz, too, there's some things offensively that they want to work on, but I think that's something that can happen pretty naturally for him. I don't think that's too much of a concern. Sometimes I think he defers too much, you know, to some of the talented players around him. I think they need him to be a little more selfish in that respect. But that's something I don't think is a concern. It's can you defend? And to be the guy in the National Hockey League wins the Norris, you have to be able to play in all situations and have the coach trust you. And that hasn't been the case yet. Remember, he was an older guy. He signs out of college.
Right.
So he's not, you know, it's not like he's the 18-year-old playing in the National Hockey League. So he's not, you know, he's not 19. But he's still a young defenseman and still has time to grow.
Well, the Oilers hope that that growth continues to occur as he's got a one-year deal there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hamburgers, and we're going to talk about hockey equipment. We'll explain. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Quarter after 10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. As anybody that has ever listened to the show knows, one of our fondest things to do is to eat. And coming up this week is Le Burger Week. Eat week sort of rhymes. Our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Legal Curve, are participants in Burger Week this week.
They got a heck of a contender right here.
They got a heck of a contender, is right. And they were kind enough to just drop us all off their hamburger, which we are now eating. Actually, I've already eaten mine. I don't know if it's...
You already used your wet nap.
Is it considered eating if I just swallow it whole?
Drew, ring the bell.
Ring the bell? It's done?
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me just
describe this burger for you. It's available starting Monday, September 1st, at Bernstein's Deli. They are open on Labor Day. So once you hear this description, you can head down there Monday, 9 a.m., I believe it is. And it's a breakfast burger. It's good for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for lunch. It's good for dinner. The whole week. Get to Bernstein's. Try this burger. It's challah toast, so the bun...
If you eat enough of these, you're going to look like you're going to labor.
Thank you. That's very clever. The bun is challah bread, which is egg bread. We know it is challah bread.
Yep.
You know, if you want to use the Hebrew. It's a beef sausage patty. Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. It's amazing.
Four strips of bacon. It's International Bacon Day today, as it happens to be.
It's true.
Yeah. And no burger is complete without a buttermilk pancake in the middle of it.
It's unbelievable.
Buttermilk pancake, bacon, beef sausage patty, challah bread. So that's where we're at so far. Now you were saying, well, what, you know, what kind of sauce goes with that? You know, do you put ketchup on that? Do you
put
mustard?
No, no, no.
Ketchup.
Relish? You know, what do you do there? I'll tell you what. You don't think. You just go to Bernstein's. And it's chipotle maple syrup.
It's unbelievable. God.
It's unbelievable.
Like, if I could, it's right now the sensation in my mouth. Like, I came into the show and
Nessie's is way bigger than mine.
I had a rough morning and I just ate that. It's
you're like a whole new man, Ezzy.
It's actually like there's a wedding in your mouth. Like there are
that makes
like,
absolutely no sense.
The bacon and the pancakes are getting married in my mouth. That's what's happening in my mouth. This burger, and if you're not familiar with Le Burger Week, there was I believe about 40 restaurants, but it doesn't matter. The only one that you have to vote for is Bernstein's Deli.
Right.
And this burger is amazing. You got to go try it out. I'll be there Monday. I'm probably going to have 6 or 7 of them. Mm-hmm. So come there, say hi.
Yeah.
Have a burger.
You'll have your own table.
Yeah.
And there's one more ingredient I forgot to mention. Organic strawberry jam. Because
I didn't taste the jam.
Well, that's because you didn't chew.
That's
you
true.
You have to chew in order to taste.
I guess the jam and the syrup, they're having their own little thing as well. Right? Because it's hard to distinguish the two, but they're also... They're swimming around the bacon and the burger and the pancake. You mentioned it off the top of the segment, Drew. We love our food, and I think this is...
It's a great burger.
That's a great burger.
This is great.
I don't know why Ezzy's is twice the size of mine, but that's for another day.
Well, there's a couple more in here, Richie, if you want one.
Yeah, I might have to.
Okay. Well, it's available at Bernstein's Deli starting on Monday, all this week. Be sure to check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com. Bernstein's Deli, located in the Cordon Village Mall, the corner of Cordon and Lanark.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program and a guy that we know well, so he should have no surprise whatsoever that we just spent about 5 minutes talking about burgers. Kalen Qualley.
Do we have a burger for Kalen?
Well, there is one here. Kalen, there is a burger here if you want to come down and get it, or you can just go to Bernstein's Deli on your own.
That's an invitation I really don't think I can pass up.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah.
Kalen?
I'm really glad you guys started off with that there. I had an in-depth conversation yesterday about Le Burger Week with a couple colleagues, and how genius is it to pair a fried egg with a burger?
It's genius, and this had a buttermilk pancake on it, so they've just raised the bar even higher. So, I mean, our minds are blown, so this is really the happiest day of our lives right now.
Exactly. And, hey, before we move on, Ez, I don't want to know where and when the consummation happens, but...
I'll keep that off air.
I think a grateful audience thanks you for that, Ezzy.
Yeah,
September is right around the corner, Kalen, and every September means one thing, and that's the start of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. We've had you on. I guess this is the fourth or the fifth year of the program now.
This would be the sixth year of the program.
Wow, how time flies! Mm-hmm. So,
2009 was the inaugural season of Pass It Forward.
So for our audience that may not be familiar with the program, why don't you give a quick rundown of what it's all about and who's on board and everything along those lines?
Yeah, you bet. So Pass It Forward is a program that was started with the goal of collecting used hockey equipment so that it can be distributed to kids in Winnipeg that might not have the opportunity to play the game of hockey, might not have the means to get their own set of hockey equipment. For anyone that's grown up playing hockey, they understand the costs related to it. And it's been a program that the entire city of Winnipeg, from what I can tell, can really relate to this, and they've supported it wholly. So we've had a lot of success because of that support and the partners of the program that make it possible. Perth Dry Cleaners, where you can drop off any piece of equipment throughout the month of September. They've been ardent supporters of the program since day one. And as well, of course, TSN 1290 and your partner stations, Bob and Virgin 103. Like I said, the most important people involved in the program are those that donate used hockey equipment.
So, Kalen, I have a basement full of used hockey equipment that I don't use anymore, or that I'm looking to get rid of, and I take it and I drop it off at any of the local Perth dry cleaners. What happens with the equipment at that point in time?
Well, Perth graciously cleans the equipment, which is very important because we all know after equipment's been used, everyone leaves their own special odor on it. So before we pass it on to the next user, Perth cleans it. And then from there, myself and a group of volunteers sorts the equipment and we pass it on to a program called the Winnipeg Jets Hockey Academy, which works with local middle schools. And with the help of the Hockey Academy, they redistribute the equipment and it gets used.
Kalen, you mentioned that this is the sixth year of the program, and I remember when you started it, we both took the same program at Red River Creative Communications, and it's amazing how far it's come. Just how big has this Pass It Forward program become since you started it?
Well, I think the best thing I can say about the program is that it seems to be moving along by itself. Like, it's become a thing that I think people are familiar with, that they've grown accustomed to every fall, that if they have a piece of equipment that they don't think is going to be used, that they know they can bring it to Perth Dry Cleaners. And that's such an incredible realization for me and anyone involved with the program, that people are recognizing that it's an annual thing. So I think that's the best thing I could say about how far the program's come.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We have a frequent listener to this the show. Is, you know, we follow him on Twitter. His name is @TheSotch on Twitter, and he tweeted us last night after we said that you were going to be coming on. He says every year he goes out to garage sales and buys used composite hockey sticks just to donate them to the Pass It Forward program. So, like you said, it has sort of taken on a life of its own, and everybody knows, you know, September, you know, when they're going through their stuff and they're trying to get rid of their old equipment, that Pass It Forward is the place to take it every September.
Right. I followed along on Twitter his conversation with Ez there yesterday, and that's incredible. That's such a great gesture by him, and I am confident that there's people like the Sot who out there know that, like I said, if they have equipment lying around home, that they know where they can donate it and know that it's going to be used. So, like I said, incredible gesture by him, and greatly appreciated.
Kalen, I'm just impressed you're able to follow a conversation that included Ezzy.
it was limited to 140 characters. So.
those are my best conversations, actually.
Right.
Kalen, before we let you go, if people want more information, where's the best way for them to find out more about the Pass It Forward program?
Pass It Forward's website, passitforward.ca. It's a great website. We spent some time laying out, so poke around on there. There's some pictures of equipment and the program that the equipment goes to.
There you go. Passitforward.ca if you have any used hockey equipment for the entire month of September at any Perth's dry cleaners location. Kalen, thanks very much. And again, we say it every year, you know, great job with this program.
Yeah.
You're doing terrific work here.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. And thanks for the continued support.
Attaboy, Kalen. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Let's go to break. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10:30 in the morning. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the show from the National Post, Sean Fitzgerald. Sean, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Second overall pick, where are you aiming in your fantasy football draft?
You know what? It's just wrapped up, just as you called. That's when I picked up the kicker, because everybody loves talking about other people's fantasy football. I ended up taking Adrian Peterson. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Anytime you can get AP, I think it's a good decision. You know, we're a bunch of Vikings fans here in the room, the proximity to Minnesota, of course. So, yeah, AP is never going to let you down, I think, in that instance.
No, it's good because it went downhill sharply.
Sean, do you have any tips for me as far as what I should maybe eat at my draft?
I think it's a lot of work. It's like hockey, you know, all the important work's done in the off season.
Yeah.
So I think carbo load first thing in the morning. You know, I like to do some jumping jacks at my laptop just before the action starts, and then really get your heart going, you know, and then you can, you know, pick that kicker in the second round before everybody else does.
That's a shrewd strategy you have there, let me tell you.
I do my best.
Sean, we brought you on to talk about NHL expansion. A lot of talk about that earlier in the week. You know, your impression, you know, how imminent do you think that expansion is, if you think it's going to happen at all?
Well, I mean, it makes sense. Everybody all week has been, you know, pointing out the fact that there's more teams in one conference than the other, and that, oh, hey, if you had two over here, that looks like it levels things up. I think the idea of going to four teams is maybe a little too dramatic, a little too drastic. Certainly the money going straight to the owners, the players wouldn't get that, because I don't think it's part of HRR, would be something that the Board of Governors might like. But I think the practical implications on, you know, the talent pool, things like that, probably make four, certainly within the short term, seem a little out of reach. Yeah, I mean, Gary Bettman's been talking, you know, dropping subtle hints for a while now. You've had Tim Leiwicki, who's, you know, a long-serving governor, you know, speaking at the Empire Club of Canada last year, talking about how Quebec would be at the front of the line, or should be at the front of the line for any new team. You know, Seattle seems like it's hung up on something, but, you know, something being they want an NBA team before they want an NHL team, and they still have a shovel in the ground in that arena. But, you know, shovels are in the ground in Las Vegas, and that arena in Quebec is, you know, they have a webcam. You can look at it online. It's coming along pretty quickly.
Sean, you talk about all those different, you know, cities and possibilities. You know, Quebec, the NHL has been there before. Toronto, if they go there, obviously they know what they're getting. Seattle, there's professional sports there. None of the big four are in Las Vegas. Why would the NHL be the first one there as opposed to the NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball?
Well, I mean, maybe they have a less problem with gambling being so close than certainly the NFL or Major League Baseball. Also, I think that, you know, that maybe there's a cachet in being the first pro league in Las Vegas, and not discounting AAA baseball, of course, but major professional league. The questions I have relate more to, you know, straight up business. I mean, there's a lot of interesting possibilities and permutations as you sit down and work through a potential franchise in Las Vegas in your head. You look at the population. The population in Las Vegas is basically the same size as Mississauga, Ontario. There's about 500,000 people. So offhand, you'd say, well, there's no way, you know, in a non-hockey market that, you know, 500,000 people is going to buy you enough season tickets to float a franchise, going to buy enough beer, going to, you know, park enough cars, going to do all of those things that we always talk about in terms of the relative size of the market. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of interesting permutations that, well, maybe Las Vegas operates differently than a lot of other teams in that. You know, the casinos get those suites, and the casinos are the ones that, you know, comp, you know, their best guests, or, you know, use it as promotions inside the casinos, and that, you know, going to a hockey game in Las Vegas becomes the same thing as going to see Carrot Top or the Blue Man Group, or the Jabberwockies, or whoever else you're going to go see, that you go down to Vegas, you know, you spend a lot of time in the casinos, and, you know, one night, instead of going to see Celine Dion, you go see the, you know, Las Vegas Panthers or whoever it is.
Mm-hmm. Sean, let's not forget about Donnie Marie, by the way. you know, you mentioned speculation, and you mentioned the permutations, and everything is obviously developing. In the National Post, you wrote about this, and you actually mentioned that the suggestion that a second Toronto team could actually play in the Air Canada Centre. How likely would that be? And is Toronto to you the least likely, destination for an expansion team?
If only because there are other markets to tap first. And there's no immediate plans for another arena here in Toronto. The one in Markham fell through because citizens successfully revolted against, you know, politicians spending, you know, ungodly amounts of money, or excuse me, committing ungodly amounts of money to funding an arena. The city of Markham would have been on the hook for $165 million of that proposed arena project. You might have heard about it last year, and that's off the books. So you look around and you say, well, you know, the Staples Center in Los Angeles has a hockey team and two basketball teams, the Clippers and the Lakers. So why couldn't the inverse be true here, that, you know, the Air Canada Centre has a basketball team and two hockey teams, that, you know, the second Toronto team would effectively become the Clippers of the NHL. They wouldn't own the building, but, you know, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment would be happy because that's another, you know, 60 or so dates that are filled a year. The building keeps humming along, and, you know, the new owner, you know, has the ability to generate funds of, you know, being the second hockey team in Southern Ontario and being in Toronto. All of the other issues about arena location are off the table. But that seems to me to be in the second tier of the franchise locations that we're talking about, simply because, you know, the Pacific Northwest is underrepresented if you just look at the map. And, you know, Quebec has that arena, you know, basically ready right now. And, you know, there are obvious questions about Quebec as well, being a government town and also has a small population. But, you know, its avidity for hockey can't really be questioned.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Our guest is Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, talking about the potential of NHL expansion. Sean, going back to Toronto, and, you know, I think the arena issue seems like it can be worked out in that, you know, they could play at the Air Canada Centre, or, you know, they could build another arena somewhere down the road. But the issue, the bigger issue to me, seems to be the one of the territorial rights that the Leafs would stake claim to. You know, what's the, I mean, I know that, you know, the dollar figure there for the Leafs to give up their territorial rights seems like it might be too much of an obstacle for the NHL to overcome in putting a team there.
Sure. So, you know, there is precedent for that as well. The Anaheim Ducks came into LA's territory and were paid off. I think that if there is a payment, and we're just talking strictly theoretically at this point, that there could be some form of payment, but also if they're playing at the Air Canada Centre, I mean, you're paying indirectly in that you're going to be renting the building. You're going to be filling those days where the Air Canada Centre might otherwise be dark. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment at this point is also owned by two telecommunications companies with pretty competitive sports networks. And, you know, sports being the salvation of network television at this point, if there's more product to put on the air, especially in Southern Ontario, that if, you know, the Toronto Clippers were going to be on TV, you know, say 100 nights a year, if you factor in, you know, the odd playoff series, preseason, et cetera, that's a lot of content. And I think that, you know, the two owners of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment can probably monetize that on top of the fact that you'd have a team renting your building and filling out dates. But, you know, there would be money to be made in the long term over that that would, you know, maybe soften any blow of the Leafs surrendering their exclusivity on Southern Ontario.
Sean, what do you think for time frame here? Or what's the NHL thinking, you know, in that respect?
Well, I mean, I wish I had, you know, a really powerful inside scoop or a source. But everybody that I've been talking to said it's not on the immediate agenda. That doesn't mean that they haven't spoken about it. I think Gary Bettman can be taken at his word that he's, you know, going to be sitting there on his throne in New York and having suitors come up and kiss the ring on his hand and pitch him, you know, we'd like to have a team, sir. Can we move it here? Can we have this here? Yeah, listening to offers of interest would be where they're at. 2016, 2017, especially for these arenas that are going to be coming online over the next year or two, I think Las Vegas is 2 years, Quebec is 1 year, would be a pretty reasonable time to start thinking about, you know, getting anchor tenants in. So Quebec and Las Vegas, in my mind, because they'll have facilities, would probably be first in line. And you're probably talking, you know, you really see the fire on this start lighting up and heating up in a year, and then 2 years is probably a time frame that we're looking at.
You mentioned TV, and obviously the local TV deals will be up for grabs, but I assume the national TV deals, I believe the national TV deals wouldn't be amended if two teams were added, say, north of the border and south of the border, so you'd assume that Rogers and then NBC would be fully on board with this because they get better value.
Sure, and NBC I'd be curious about because I don't know what impact, you know, having a team in Las Vegas beyond, you know, something as a novelty. People are like, hey, look, there's Las Vegas, wow. But, you know, you watch hockey on TV. It's not like, you know, it's football where you can have these really interesting wide panoramas of, you know, here's the downtown area. And Las Vegas, the arena they're building is right on the strip. If anybody's familiar with Las Vegas, I think it's my understanding it's near New York, New York, which is right off the strip, the big casinos. So for hockey, yeah, in NBC, I don't see the huge bump. But yeah, if it is Quebec and we're talking nationally, certainly Rogers would get a bump in terms of people picking up and watching, you know, the return of the Nordiques on national television.
You know, if the NHL expands by two teams or four teams, you're adding another, you know, probably 45 to 90 players into the league. You know, if it's by two teams, 45 by four, it's 90. You know, how concerned are you about the NHL just diluting its product to, you know, the quality of its product?
Well, you'd have Colt Nore as your first line center. Frazier McLaren would probably be your number two wing.
Only picking Winnipeggers, Sean, huh?
Two good Winnipeg boys.
There you go. I'm doing my best here. I've run out of them off the top of my head. But yeah, so I think that's a huge issue. I mean, you're already starting to see strains. I mean, you know, here in Toronto, you have a team that, you know, has trouble filling its number one center spot. You know, imagine, you know, taking four more number one centers and then spreading them across the league. You know, 34 teams, that's huge. Especially when there's still competition from the KHL, keeping a lot of Europeans over there. That seems like it would be a severe drain. Four teams especially would be, I couldn't even fathom what rosters would look like in a 34-team NHL.
Sean, we'll let you go on this last question. I'm not sure if you heard Dan Patrick's comments on his radio program talking about the possibility not so much of expansion but of relocation of both the Coyotes and potentially the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, do you think that it's more likely to be relocation or do you think that it is going to be expansion?
I think, you know, as we're talking about these markets, the notion of stalking horse is always something that needs to be, you know, put back in play. I mean, that's what Hamilton, Ontario was for years and years, that to get more favorable. I mean, especially Carolina, that arena is not really that old. And, you know, there is, you know, some avidity just because of, you know, you look at the market, there's a lot of people from northern states working in the tech sector in North Carolina that there is, you know, despite its location geographically, certain, I think, interest in hockey. I'd be surprised if it was Carolina. But, you know, you look at Florida, you look at, you know, potentially Phoenix, although I'm sure there's not a human being on the planet who's not sick of hearing about the Coyotes and their play. But yeah, I think relocation would certainly play, especially if we're talking about four new potential markets. That gives the NHL a lot of leverage with those cities.
Sean Fitzgerald covers the NHL for the National Post. He's also, are you going to be at the Labor Day in Hamilton?
In Hamilton or in Toronto or in Burlington or Nora, wherever it is they decide they're going to play this thing, I'll be there.
They had a fire there last night? Is that what I understand at the new?
They did. A small fire in an electrical room that apparently was contained quickly, didn't cause widespread damage, but did inflict $25,000 in damage. So it's going great.
It's a hell of a star-crossed stadium they have there in Hamilton, but it should be entertaining at the very least. Sean, thanks very much for doing this. We'll let you get back to obsessing over your fantasy football team.
That's exactly what I'm going to do. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sean. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This man's job?
Yeah. Oh, nice choice.
Drew.
Bruce song?
Yeah.
I just tasted the jam.
Oh, that's...
There was a little bit of the burger left, and I finally started to taste the jam with the syrup.
That's good.
It's wow.
Great choice by Timmy. That's an obscure one. I like it. I was singing this lunch the other day.
Oh, there you go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve.
Tim's the man. It's just, yeah. That's... That's the way it is.
Yeah, you should get hazard pay for having to put up with us on a weekly basis. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. One final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Here on this Saturday morning, Labor Day weekend. I asked Rich about his opinion on the Labor Day Classic. Ezzy, what's your opinion? What do you think is going to happen?
Bombers.
There you go.
It's been 10
years. With a mouthful of pancake bread and
it's been 10 years since we've been able to go into Saskatchewan and win. And
we've been able to go in there and win. We just haven't gone in there.
Well, yeah, what I mean is come back with the win. So I think they are going to come back, and I know, you know, the Rough Riders signed Dressler and all that. But I think the Bombers are fired up. And remember last year, the Bombers beat the Rough Riders in the Banjo Bowl.
It's true.
And they only had 3 wins last year. I think this year it's going to be a different story.
Yeah. No.
Different burger.
I love how you've been chewing the whole time you've been talking to.
Yeah, good for radio when that happens.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the interesting article from our friend Kevin Allen, USA Today. In that
it was.
Yeah. Yep. You know, there's a
we should tweet that out for sure.
I'll tweet it out right now.
Yeah.
There's a former Boston Junior A hockey player who somehow suffered two catastrophic spine injuries. The first one, he was paralyzed partially, and then he was able to make a full recovery, so much so that he was actually cleared to resume playing hockey, which in and of itself is amazing.
Yeah.
And then he, I mean, talk about being under a black cloud. He was then again tripped into the boards and suffered a paralysis again. And he's again, you know, partially paralyzed, and he's decided to, you know, take his injuries and take his unfortunate circumstances and put them to good use. He's starting a program in which he develops a warning track in hockey, meaning he's encouraging rinks throughout the NHL to paint about a 2-foot line, a width of about 40 inches from all the way around the boards, to let players know that they are in a dangerous zone where they're close to the boards and susceptible to injury if they were to fall into the boards.
I appreciate the idea, and it's terrible what's happened to him. But I don't really think it's necessary, guys. I mean, anybody who plays hockey, you know where the boards are. It's not like baseball. You play baseball, you're looking at home plate, you're running back, you're playing in different parks all the time. It's not the same park you're playing all the time, right? Different parks. Every hockey rink is the exact same. And you're going back on the ball, and you're on a very unfamiliar center field, and you start feeling the wall. You're not sure where it is, and the dirt gives you a sign. And your eye's on the ball the whole time. I mean, a hockey rink, everybody knows where the boards are. These terrible injuries happen, but I don't think you need a warning track. It happens so fast. Does it even matter? I think it's unnecessary, and I think it's unfortunate what's happened to him, and I like the fact, and I applaud him for trying to help and think of creative ideas. I just don't think this one's necessarily very helpful.
Richie, the article mentions this, Drew, and Richie, 225 rinks in 27 different states will have these lines by October 1st.
Doesn't mean it's necessary.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, they are implementing this, and I'm not sure if there are any plans to do it here in Canada. I think it's a good idea, and, you know, Richie, whether or not it's a filled-in line around the entire rink, it could very easily be just a line.
So you're skating on the ice. Okay, I just want to give an example. Again, I guess there's no harm in putting it out there. I just don't think it helps at all. You're skating on the ice,
right,
and you're going back on the boards, and you're looking at the boards, you're looking at the puck, and the guy's coming and pursuing. When do you not know where the boards are?
Yeah, I think the idea is because it's a bright orange color that you may be – when it'll have more awareness. It's something.
Put a stop sign on the back of the jersey first for the hitting from behind. You know where the boards
are.
That's something we've advocated for a while.
Well, and they did do that for a while. I mean, I think when they did
do
that.
They should do it in the NHL.
I'm not sure. Maybe, you know what, next show we'll look into this. But I think, and again, you know, we mentioned the story, and Thomas Smith is an incredible story, and what he's doing is very admirable. First and foremost, if this catches on. I mean, I think with all new ideas, I agree with Richie, by the way.
I think
that it's has some merits. This idea has some merits. I think implementation is one thing, and is it actually going to accomplish? And there are costs. I mean, $75,000 to $100,000 for community centers, that's not...
No, that's not the cost. His lookup line costs $500. Yeah, $75,000 to $100,000. He looked into changing the boards to a springier material.
The cost
is minimal.
I was trying to figure out why that would be $75,000, but
were you sniffing paint before you?
No, but
you drank some last night.
I mean, so the cost is fairly minimal. But again, is it? You know, we mentioned the stop signs. I mean, I think we're all in agreement here. I mean, the hitting from behind, is horrible. And you know, every time it happens, I mean, it seems like, you know, we're trying to talk about how that could have been avoided.
I've never seen a player played where a guy doesn't know where the boards is.
Yeah.
It's the game.
If you're talking about youth hockey, I mean, these are, because you're not talking about putting this into NHL arenas. You're talking about putting this into community centers and rec arenas. What's the downside?
I know that he was tripped and it's not necessarily a hit, but the kids are playing, they're not hitting.
I know, but what's the downside? I mean, for $500.
I understand there's no downside. You paint lines, that's fine. I just don't. I mean, why don't you know? You could paint lines different places on the ice. I don't see the need for it. I honestly don't see the need for it. And again, it's terrible what happened to him. I just don't know why. In what situation you'd be going at 40K and say, oh, there's the orange area and that's the warning track.
Well, guys, you know, we talked about the stop signs on the back of the jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still chewing, by the way.
Are you still eating the burger?
No, how many burgers did you get?
I just ate one. I think Drew ate two.
I did not.
Remus got one. He got in there.
What a shock.
An element of this that I think we've talked about, and let me get serious while I, you know, chew this bacon and pancake concoction. It's the way players turn into the boards, really. And we've seen this. We see this at the NHL level.
I'm turning your back, but that's not a warning.
No, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It's a technical.
Richie, to me, that's the. We talked about this, right? The age of hitting has gone up. Yeah. I'm a big proponent for body checking in hockey. It has a huge role. Scotty Stevens, that's my favorite hockey player of all time. He played the hockey the right way. Mm-hmm. Clean hitter. You have to be able, as a young hockey player, to be able to receive a hit.
I agree with that.
It's more important to be able to receive a hit than it is to give a hit. And the thing is, when you're going into the boards and things happen so quickly, you have to be aware of where you are on the ice. And again, back to, you know, to summarize this segment, if this helps and, you know, it turns out that Hockey Canada and Hockey Manitoba, different hockey associations across the country, think that this is going to help.
This is starting in the U.S. first.
Yeah, then, you know, why not bring it in?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
This is an easy one.
You're chewing the hamburger, aren't you?
No, I'm done chewing.
Okay.
First, I have two cheers. First cheer, Bernstein's Deli and this hamburger. Wow. Thank you for making my weekend.
Thank you for being a friend.
My weekend can't get any better than this hamburger. Second, hockey-related cheer. Scotty Gomez, he's getting another chance with the New Jersey Devils. Lou Lamoriello has brought him back for a tryout. He'll be at training camp. Scotty Gomez has had a really tough time, especially since that last year in Montreal. And you know what? I think he's going to make the team. You remember a couple years back, Peter Sikora came back. So nice to see Scotty Gomez back with the Devils. He won a cup there. He won two cups there, actually.
It's like, Lou, have you seen him play? Have you seen him play?
Hey, I've read that he's in the best shape of his life.
Everybody's in the best shape of their life. Devin Setoguchi, I'm just going to take this last chance to jeer his awful performance here in Winnipeg last year. And, you know, he talks about, I read the article in the Calgary Herald about the new start and all that stuff. I hate when the guys talk about the whole new start business after completely mailing in a season. I hate that. It bothers me. It's like as if halfway through they're just waiting for the new start. You know, finish it. Finish strong. Play it the right way. And I should cheer my brother and his fiance now.
Absolutely.
That was Sam. My cheer.
Adam and yes. Sam, yeah.
Yes.
You stole my
fiance,
cheer.
So. An engagement.
Well, that's why it was quite the party last night.
I'm glad you guys were able to make it. It was touch and go for a little while there, but you're both troopers and you're able to push through. That's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Sean Fitzgerald from the National Post, Marty Biron, analyst for TSN, RDS, and the MSG Network, and of course, Kaylin Qualley of the Pass Forward Hockey Equipment Program. In case you missed any of the interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. The whole show will be there as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and of course, Bernstein's Deli. Please support our sponsors as they help support the program. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Gensburg, for producer Tim and producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's Illegal Curve. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.